to the Early Years Parenting Podcast, brought to you by Number 9 The Nursery in Croydon. I'm Jessie Cox, and I'm your host today, as well as the Head of Business Development at Number 9. I'm also a mum of two who have both been at our nursery. And today we are joined by Dr. Janet Aylott. Janet is a registered nutritionist with over 25 years experience across many different areas, including infant and child nutrition. She works with nurseries and preschools to improve the food and nutrition that we give to our young children. She's also a mum of two of now grown up boys. So you are in very good hands today. Janet, thank you so much for being with us today. On our previous podcast, we've discussed fussy eaters and weaning babies, and we've also done one recently on how to build healthy food habits. And today we're going to be discussing intolerances and food allergies. Now, Janet, please forgive my ignorance, but what is the difference between an allergy and an intolerance?
So, thanks for having me today. The difference between allergies and intolerances is all very scientific. So an allergy, a true food allergy, is actually an immune reaction to protein in food. So it's a type of the way that the immune system reacts to that food. It almost treats it like an invader, a foreign object.
Right.
So it's a true food allergy is an immune reaction. An intolerance is different.
Right.
An intolerance is where the body is unable to either digest a food properly. So for example, a milk intolerance won't be anything to do with the protein in the milk. It's to do with the sugar in the milk. So the lactose in the milk.
Wow.
So they are completely different in terms of the scientific process that goes on within the body.
Yeah.
True food allergy is something that would need to be diagnosed.
Yeah.
Whereas food intolerance is a little bit more tricky because it's not often immediate.
Yeah.
It can be something that can happen over the course of hours or days after the food's ingested, whereas true food allergy tends to be very immediate.
And, you know, having had two children myself, I think it can be quite difficult to spot an intolerance.
It's very difficult. And food isn't the only thing that causes reactions in children. And I think we sometimes think that if a child gets eczema, for example, or a rash, that it's down to the food they've eaten. But it might be something completely different. It might be a different type of washing powder or exposure to environmental toxins. So it's not always food that's the problem. So diagnosing a food intolerance is very, very difficult.
Gosh. And, it seems to me that there's a lot more kind of awareness now about allergies and intolerance. Is that something that's we've always had these issues and now we're just noticing it? Or is it, are we seeing our children being more sensitive to these things?
So there's definitely been an increase in allergies and intolerances over probably the past 30, 40 years.
Mm.
Some of that will be because we're better at diagnosing and recognising those things.
Yeah.
And some of it will be down to the changes in medical care, the environment that we live in, the types of foods we have in our diet, the way that we raise our children can all have an impact on development of these things. So there's definitely been changes and there's been increases, but probably not as huge a rise that
as much as we think.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's so interesting. And are children born with these allergies, and is it the same with intolerance or does it happen over time?
So that's like a really big question to answer in a way. So allergies are developed sometimes before birth.
Wow.
So there is an influence of maternal nutrition, maternal health and nutrition.
Wow.
The way a baby is born, so if a baby is born by cesarean or through a normal birth, if a baby is breastfed or formula fed can have an influence.
Oh my goodness.
What mum ate during pregnancy.
Yeah.
Whether mum or dad has allergies themselves can have an influence.
Gosh.
The environment that you're brought up in can have an influence. So yes, it's something that you can be born with. There's definitely a tendency to be more at risk of developing an allergy if you come from a genetic background which has a lot of allergy in it.
Yeah.
But there are other influencing factors as well.
Gosh, that's so interesting because I think as parents we almost want to put it down to like that one thing, don't we? We just want to find the answer and move on. But it sounds to me like it's quite complex.
It's much more complicated than that. And there are instances where you may have parents with very severe allergies and they have children who have no allergies. So there's sometimes no rhyme or reason as to when a child will develop an allergy or won't. And we see often in families, siblings where one sibling will have severe allergies and the other sibling will be absolutely fine. So it's very hard to say whether or not a child will develop allergies.
Mm. And are there like some common symptoms with like intolerances particularly that, you know, you can go, oh, well, that looks like an intolerance?
Yes, certainly. And allergies and intolerances do have similar symptoms in lots of ways. So it's quite difficult to determine which it is. But intolerances tend to be more digestive issues. So, for example, tummy pains, abdominal pains.
Which is hard to spot in babies as well, isn't it? Because you just don't know.
No, absolutely. But things like diarrhoea, vomiting, constipation is sometimes a sign of an intolerance. Sometimes it develops into skin problems like eczema or hives or rashes on the body. But as I said earlier, it could be something completely different to food. So it's so difficult to actually pinpoint exactly what is happening.
And is there any like merit for like getting your child tested before that you start weaning?
The simple answer is no. Because having a test before you start weaning isn't going to tell you anything. So what we understand from a scientific point of view is that allergies develop after exposure to the said allergen.
Right, so if you're doing a test before they've even started, you're not going to get anything anyway. Right, interesting.
That level of exposure could happen in utero.
Right.
It could happen through breastfeeding. Mm. It could be through another mechanism. So until you actually give that child that food, you're not going to know what that reaction or no reaction will be. Mm. And even in a child who's been exposed through breast milk or in utero, that could lead to what we call tolerance for that allergen. So there's lots of scientific evidence now to show that the more exposure we have to allergens, the less likely a child is to develop those food allergies.
Well, that's changed, hasn't it? Because I'm sure, like, at the beginning, there's all these lists of things you shouldn't be eating when you were, you know, pregnant.
And, absolutely.
You know, don't have peanuts when you're pregnant. Has that all changed now?
That's completely changed. Wow. So back in the day when I had my kids, there was definitely a thinking that if you had peanuts, for example, during pregnancy, that would potentially lead to an increased risk of developing peanut allergy. But the scientific understanding now is that actually exposure to those allergens during pregnancy helps a child to tolerate those allergens as they become older. So there's loads and loads of research looking at what we call oral tolerance for allergens.
Wow.
So actually building up an ability to deal with those allergens, because the immune system isn't designed to actually be allergic.
Gosh, that's so interesting. And I think when you have that little baby, you know, when they arrive, they seem so new. You just want to keep everything away from them. You want to live in like a really sterile environment. You know, you want everyone to wash their hands before they come in. They should anyway. But, you know, are we doing more damage by keeping our kids in a very sterile environment?
Yes. So there's the thinking around the principle, what used to be called the hygiene hypothesis, which is that the more clean you are, the more likely you are to develop allergies.
Oh, my goodness.
So the reason being is that the immune system that we have in our bodies, our innate immune system, is designed to fight off pathogens. So we're trying to protect the body.
Yeah.
And what happens in this very sterile, clean environment is the immune system doesn't have very much to do.
Gosh.
So it almost is trying to search and find a way to react. And that can happen to things like food allergens because the immune system hasn't had the ability to deal with anything else.
Gosh, that makes it sound like it's almost like a muscle then that you need to exercise to develop that in your body.
Yeah, it's almost like that. And there's thinking now that it's all down to our gut bacteria. So there's a lot of research going into what we call the gut microbiome.
Yeah.
So the bacteria that live in our bodies, which are there, we cohabit with those bacteria.
Yeah.
But it appears that the gut bacteria have a role to play in developing our immune system.
Gosh.
So it's almost like we need to find a way to work with our gut bacteria to make it have a positive effect on our immune system rather than a negative effect.
Wow, that's so interesting. And it seems to be that there's a couple of foods that is recognised a lot for like intolerance or allergies, like eggs, like milk. Is there a reason behind that?
The main reason is that's often the first foods that babies are exposed to. So if you imagine, you know, we don't see allergies to foods that you don't get exposed to. Straight away.
Like broccoli.
Exactly. So it tends to be foods that are major parts of the diet that you are exposed to quite early on. So milk being a big one, eggs being a big one.
Yeah.
And we see often with those forms of allergies or intolerances that children tend to grow out of those.
Yeah. Is that because they're given the opportunity to grow out of them? Because, you know, I was talking to a mum the other day. Her child has got like a milk intolerance. I was pretty certain that my son had the same thing, but we kept on doing the milk ladder. I think I must have started that milk ladder about 8 times before we got to the point where he could, you know, have it and be all right. And she was saying, well, no, I'm just not going to bother. I'm just going to cut it out of their diet. Is that, should we be putting our children on these milk ladders and pushing them to try and get through it, or do they just go through it naturally? And I was probably just pushing my son a bit hard.
Yeah, so the important thing to say is if you have a suspicion that your child has an allergy or an intolerance, it's important to speak to a healthcare professional.
Yeah.
What we don't want to do is to start diagnosing ourselves. And treating ourselves purely because what you don't want to do is restrict your child's diet unnecessarily.
Yeah.
So you're quite right in saying that if we continue to give that food, whatever it might be, we can start to build up a tolerance. But that's only safe if you know that that child isn't going to have a severe reaction.
Yeah.
So it's really important to talk to a healthcare professional. Mm. But with milk intolerance particularly, if you don't keep including milk in the diet, then your body reduces the ability to actually digest that milk.
Wow.
So there's something in milk called lactose, which is the sugar that we have in milk. And our bodies produce an enzyme, which is what breaks down that sugar, called lactase.
Right.
And if you stop giving milk, then we stop producing lactase. So therefore, it's a self-perpetuating problem.
Just goes on and on and on. They never develop the ability to have
it. And that's the same in children and adults as well. So it's really important if there is not going to be a negative implication in terms of that baby's health to keep giving that milk in the diet.
That's so interesting. And will children naturally grow out of that, or is it putting it back in the diet that helps them do that?
Every child tends to be different. But what we do know from the statistics is that milk and egg allergy particularly tend to be ones that children will grow out of. What we do see, though, is that a child who has had a milk or an egg allergy, particularly not necessarily intolerance, but an allergy, will tend to go on to develop other allergies later in life. Mm. That could be another food allergy like peanuts or tree nuts, or it could be things like hay fever, allergic rhinitis. So if a child has that almost allergic tendency, we call it the atopic environment.
Yeah.
If they are going to be in that environment, that way of developing, they are more likely to go on to develop other allergies later in life.
Gosh. So is there anything that, you know, as parents that we can do to kind of reduce, you know, allergies or intolerances, or is it just luck of the draw?
It's a bit of both, really. Yeah. If you are, as a parent, you are someone who has allergies or your partner has allergies, then there is a chance that your child would develop those allergies.
Yeah.
What you can do, I mean, one of the key things is to try and breastfeed. So there's quite a lot of evidence to show that breastfeeding helps to reduce risk of developing allergies. Mm. However, saying that, it's not a given.
Yeah.
So there's still a chance that a child will develop allergies when they've been breastfed or not breastfed. If you are a parent who's worried about specific allergens, like, for example, if you have a peanut allergy and you worried that your child will have a peanut allergy, you may want to talk to a health professional about how you might start to wean your baby to make sure that they're in a safe environment. But a lot of the advice around allergies to try and eat as normal a diet as possible during pregnancy. Mm. So trying to have that raft of different foods.
Not just eating pasta like I did. Yeah.
But it's all about exposure. You know, the baby is being exposed to those different foods. And as I said in a previous podcast, it's about, you know, if you're exposing your baby to all the foods that you like, they're more likely to have that like and dislike. And it's the same with allergens. If you're exposing them to peanut proteins and milk proteins and egg proteins during pregnancy, they are more likely to build up those tolerances.
So like cutting stuff out when you're pregnant, it probably isn't going to be the solution that you hope it is.
Absolutely not.
Gosh.
But it's important to take that on an individual basis. So if you yourself...
If you've got an allergy, there's nothing you can do. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's really important to listen to your health professional.
That's so interesting. Is there any merit for like organic food? Does that stop allergies or intolerance?
No scientific evidence at all to say that organic food would have any impact whatsoever. If you think about what organic means, it's about reducing levels of things like pesticides.
Yeah.
And there's no scientific evidence to link pesticides to developing allergies.
Gosh, because I've had a lot of people going, you know, it's got to be organic because I don't want the baby to, you know, have an intolerance. That's so interesting.
In the UK, the food regulations are very, very strict. So any food that is sold in the supermarket, whether it be organic or non-organic, has very strict guidelines in terms of the levels of pesticides that can be used, for example. Mm. So any food that you buy in the UK in a supermarket will not have very, very high levels anyway.
Gosh.
Organic is a preference, a choice that you might make for your family, but it won't necessarily have an impact in terms of allergy risk.
That's so interesting. I wonder then if some of the advice that we're getting is because of other countries and not
It's possibly
ourselves.
Because of other countries. And yeah. I think everybody wants to do the best by their child.
Oh, we love them so much.
Absolutely.
We want to keep them safe.
Absolutely. So, you know, that's a choice that you make as a parent. Mm. And it's something that it's not going to do any harm to the child to give them organic food. It's just more expensive.
It's just got a lot
more expensive.
Money. Yeah. Does food affect skin conditions like eczema? Can it make it worse and better?
It can do, is the answer. And as I said previously, it can be food. So we do see situations where you'll see a reaction for milk or egg, for example, where a baby's skin will be affected. But what we need to be careful of is that we don't start taking foods out of the diet without medical
talking.
Support. Because it might be something completely different. It might be the environment. It might be the fabric conditioner you're using. It might be what you wash your bed sheets in. So it's really important to take the advice from the health professional. And when you're playing around with a baby or a child's diet, you've got to do that with a bit of support, because it's very easy to think, well, okay, it's milk. I'm going to remove milk from baby's diet. That has huge implications in terms of their nutrition. So there's always a replacement, an alternative that needs to be substituted.
And sometimes those alternatives can make it worse. Like with my son, you know, trying different formulas, we actually ended up in a worse position than we were before.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really important to take that medical advice from a health visitor or from your GP, just to make sure that you're trying everything, but you're also making sure there's nothing else going on. There's no other medical reasons for eczema. Eczema, unfortunately, is a very, very common condition in very young children. Often they grow out of it as they get older. And often it's nothing to do with food. It's something completely different.
Gosh, that's so interesting. And is there like an age for children where like they're kind of home free, where you think, oh, good, we haven't got any allergies? Or is it just one of those things that can happen at any point?
Unfortunately, it's something that can happen at any point. And you might have had a child who's had absolutely no problems whatsoever. They might then go on to develop asthma or hay fever, which is not necessarily a food allergy, but it's all linked to that atopic situation. I mean, I've got a relative who developed a fish allergy in her 70s.
Oh, for goodness sake.
So there's no time in your life where you're home and dry. Things like celiac disease, which is a gluten intolerance, often it develops in people's 30s and 40s. So it very much depends on your genetics and the environment you live in.
And is it, you know, if you've got an allergy like in your 70s, can you get over it? Is it just, is it one of those things that can come and it can go?
Not really. Once you tend to get food allergy or severe food allergies later in life, they stay with you.
Yeah.
But something like a fish allergy is potentially easier to manage than a milk allergy or an egg allergy, because it's not in every food that we have. It's such a big topic. And there's been, you know, 30, 40 years of research looking at, you know, what causes allergies, and we still don't know the answer. And we don't understand exactly what the causes are. We understand a bit more about what contributing factors might be. And certainly the whole research around this, the gut microbiome, the gut bacteria is gathering pace.
Developing. And
I think over the next 20 years, potentially, we will find a solution. But right now, there isn't one. There's also a lot more research now into this, building this oral tolerance. So there's trials going on where children with severe peanut allergies are being cured of their allergies through building oral tolerance through clinical trials, which is amazing.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because you always think that the peanut allergy is the one that's like the most dangerous. And there's no cure. So that's
So, I mean, clinical trial stages, there's been some really positive results. So we see children who have been unable to tolerate any peanuts are now able to eat peanuts every day.
Gosh.
But the key thing with that is that they have to keep eating the peanuts. So even if they don't enjoy the taste, they have to keep eating them every day because it continues, it keeps up that oral tolerance.
Because the body's just amazing, isn't it, that it can even do that.
Absolutely. But the key thing, again, with that is you should never do it on your own. So don't think, oh, my child's got a peanut allergy, I'll just give them peanuts, because that obviously...
Don't do that at home.
No, please don't do that at home. Always take medical advice.
It's I think it's interesting now because we live in such an age of information that it's so easy for you to kind of self-diagnose now. And I think as a parent, you often don't think you need to go and get help when it comes to food. What's the best place to start if you think your child has got, you know, an intolerance?
So the best place to start is either your health visitor or your GP. Mm-hmm. The problem we have is that things take a long time. So there's not enough allergy specialists here in the UK to deal with the level of patients that are looking for appointments. So GP health is definitely the best place to start. There's also some really good charities. So there's a charity called the Anaphylaxis Campaign, which deals with severe food allergy. But also Allergy UK is another charity. And they have loads of information on their websites to go and have a look. If you think you have a problem with your child, look for the information. They'll signpost you to where to find more detailed.
Because you can see those things online. I mean, I think it's more aimed at adults where you can do like the allergy tests. What's your thoughts on those?
Yeah, you can see the face that I'm
They can't see, but I can see your face.
So, yes, there are tests that you can pay for.
Yeah.
There is not a whole lot of scientific basis for those types of tests. Often they're looking for markers in the immune system, which indicate you that within your body you're having some form of reaction to that foodstuff. The problem with those types of tests is they tend to diagnose rafts of different allergens.
Right.
So, for example, you might be told that you're intolerant to maybe 10 or 20 different foods.
Gosh.
The issue is then, what do you do with that information? Do you just remove all those things from your diet?
Yeah.
If you remove all those things from your diet, you might end up with nutritional deficiencies. So the advice from a nutritionist point of view would always be speak to a health professional first. If you think as an adult, a certain food is causing you problems and you can remove that food from your diet without it having any implications to your nutritional intake, that's fine. If it's going to cause you problems, then you should always speak to a professional.
So, Janet, is a food aversion the same as an allergy and an intolerance?
So, no, a food aversion is quite different. So if you imagine, you know, you're trying to give your child a food and they point blank say no, they don't want it, that's an aversion. Aversion is having a reason, a preference over what they might want to eat. That's very different to an allergy or intolerance. And it's really important as parents and also in the nursery setting that we are giving a really good range of different foods to improve nutritional status of that child. Mm. If we were to allow every child to say their likes and dislikes and what they're going to eat and what they're not going to eat, then we're going to limit their diet. Having a true food allergy or an intolerance is a very different situation, and we have to be very clear that giving a child that food when they have an allergy or intolerance could cause harm, whereas a food aversion, it's not going to cause them harm. So we have to be very clear that we are expanding the diet as much as we possibly can when children are very small, for all of the reasons that we talked about in the last podcast about building those healthy habits, and also providing a wide range of nutrients that the child needs to grow and develop.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting, you know, what you were saying last podcast about, you know, children's growth, that we can stop them reaching their potential if we're limiting their food. And I think, you know, as a parent, you know, you want your children to be strong and healthy and, you know, have good bone structure and all of that. I never really thought that if you're having preferences of what they can or what they can't eat, that you might be damaging that.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you imagine a child who doesn't want to eat different foods, and there's a whole different array of different foods they don't want to eat, or they're being refused to have them in their diet by parents or by nursery, then they're missing out on the nutrients those foods give them. And it's fine if it's a rare fruit or vegetable that they don't like and it doesn't impact their nutritional intake, that's fine. But if it's a whole food group, like milk, dairy, then it can have a real impact in terms of growth and development.
Wow, so interesting. And, you know, when we're thinking about, you know, like allergies and intolerance, you know, I kind of have that picture of wanting to keep the kids like super clean and, you know, not wanting them to get dirty. You know, I know we touched a bit on this before, but is there a part of that where if we keep them super clean and we don't let them get messy, then that won't, that might not affect them having allergies or intolerances?
Yeah. So there's a lot of thought that if we keep our kids too clean, it's almost like fueling the fire for those allergies and intolerances.
Wow. So actually the opposite of what Absolutely. You hope it's doing.
Because the immune system is there to protect us from invasion, from infection, from viruses, from bacteria. So if we don't use the immune system the way it's designed, so by fighting off of those things, then it turns itself on its head and starts fighting off things that we do need, like allergens in food. Mm. So messy play is really important. Mm. You know, playing in the dirt is really important. Being outside, having animals in the house, they can all help to reduce our risk of developing allergies because our immune system is dealing with the pathogens or the things in the atmosphere that it's meant to deal with, not with allergens in food.
I think that's so interesting because I think, you know, it was a while ago now, but, you know, the whole process of COVID's really changed the way that we saw, you know, infection and the environment that we're raising our children in. You know, before, I don't think there was many of us gave much thought about it. Now there's this kind of feeling as a parent that you want to wipe everything clean with antibacteria, and you know, you walk around with the antibacteria wipes in your handbag for the children's hands. It's hard to think that actually could be doing damage.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not going to do damage in the situations like that.
Short term.
You know, if you're out for the day in a city and you kids got dirty hands, obviously you're going to wipe them. It's more about, you know, in safe environments like the home or, you know, at nursery or playing in the garden, it's fine for kids to get messy.
Yeah.
They don't have to be clean all of the time. Mm. That, you know, that freedom to express themselves through messy play is really, really important, not just for reducing risks of things like allergies and intolerances, but also for social behaviour. Mm. So, you know, all of those things are really important for children's development.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as parents, we can almost pass our fear on to our kids, can't we, where we want them to live in this pristine, wrapped in bubble wrap home life. And it's not always helpful, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the world isn't like that. You know, we do need to experience exposure to all of those different environmental things that are going to potentially help us in terms of reducing risk of allergies and intolerances too.
Wow. Every time I talk to you, I just learn so much. And I love what you said about, you know, the immune system almost being like a muscle where we need to let it exercise and, you know, develop and grow and not keep us in a position where we're fighting it for them, allowing those children to have their own immune system.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's even research showing that things like antibiotics can increase the risk of developing allergies. So we're almost like wiping out or not supporting our immune system to develop by changing our gut bacteria, so our gut microbiome, and that can have an implication for allergy risk too. So there's all sorts of things going on. The body's very clever at trying to use its immune system in different ways.
Gosh, that's so interesting. I love that about my GP because he's always so careful about giving antibiotics. And I think that's really interesting what you just said there. I think a lot of us feel like we just want the quick fix. We just want to get over the thing quickly. But, you know, our bodies are incredible and good at fighting stuff. Oh, thank you so much. I just love talking to you. I can talk to you all day. And thank you at home for listening. And if you have any questions for us, then please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that on our website, which is number9thenursery.co.uk, or you can email us at manager@number9thenursery.co.uk. Please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you again soon, no doubt.